Man, if my Achilles was a little bit more healthy, I'd be hitting it right now.
I do not doubt that at
all. I'd be hitting it.
I literally don't doubt that.
Honestly, I could probably hit it right now.
I guarantee you could.
This golf season, I'm not going down.
That's true,
I'm not going down for no reason.
Summer's getting right around the corner.
That's what
now
I did
would
it,
be
actually.
The last time.
It was end of June, so we are approaching the one-year mark.
Nice little one-year anniversary. Well, I guess, is that a good anniversary?
It's
I
an
guess
anniversary.
It's a positive, you know,
right.
In terms of the progress you've made since.
I won't spend this summer in a boot.
That's great. Because that also probably affects, like, you can go to the water.
I couldn't do anything. I mean, well, and I don't even remember how long it was.
How
I
does
think
the Achilles, can you like kick? Like when you swim, would it have to be a lot more arms? Or
it would be fine
not?
Now.
Okay.
Now.
Well, now it would be
now,
fine.
But I believe after surgery, I was,
interesting.
I feel like it was a month before I got the boot.
Okay.
So now that's the end of July.
Okay.
Then I get the boot and it's, I think, 6 to 8 weeks in the boot.
Gotcha.
And then because basically I didn't get rid of the boot. I didn't do any shows. Did I? I don't believe I did any shows here
in
the
boot. No, you didn't.
So I think I was done with the boot. It must have been not soon after that. I can check. But I think I was done with the boot in maybe September. So from when I tore it in June to September, being done with the boot. And I probably should have still worn the boot, but I was auditioning and I'm like, I'm not walking in.
You remember our first time we met?
You were in the behind the glass.
I came in there.
Yo, yeah, you were actually in here, and I said, "Oh, is this what's going? Who? Hello."
Yeah, I remember I came in there, and then I tripped on the cord.
That's
really bad,
right.
And no one, not one of you, went to go try and pick me
it
up.
It wasn't my place.
Lift a hand, a fallen teammate, and
I was
none
so confused.
Of you guys.
To I don't
fair,
even know
you
who you are.
You tripped over my cord, and I couldn't see what happened. I just saw Jason
you
sit here.
Live with your own failure.
Yeah, I don't even know.
Back to me.
I don't even know who you are.
That was terrible.
Wow. Wow. Good times.
What a time.
I just thought, you know, you would be sympathetic with the whole injury you just suffered.
I'm
down
on the
ground.
I'm going to injure myself trying to help you. I'm third on the list. I am definitely third on the list in that situation. There you go. Well, now we know each other, and we know that the Kings are very familiar with CJ McCollum. Chris, I have some numbers for you.
Yes.
That are insane, okay? And I don't know, without Zion driving, I do think the reason CJ, I was thinking about it in my head, the last game specifically, Zion driving, collapsing the defense, that was a big reason. And then once Trey Murphy started hitting, there's rotations happening and you're getting sucked in due to Zion. Then you look up and you think, how is CJ open? And then the other threes that he made were in transition. And honestly, don't turn the ball over and you know, try to avoid the long misses. Obviously, you're not trying to miss, but don't turn the ball over and allow them to get those transition threes. And maybe you make them, maybe you miss them. CJ just hasn't really seemed to miss against the Kings. These are the breakdowns of the games against the Pelicans. The first two games, they did not have CJ McCollum. Game number one, they won 129-93. Game number two, no CJ again, no Keegan Murray. That was the closest game they had, 117-112. Game number three, 127-117. CJ was 3 of 5 from three. Game number four, the Pelicans won 133-100. De'Aaron Fox scored 3 points. You said he was 1 for 10.
1 for 10.
From the field, okay? CJ was 7 for 10 from three-point land. Game number five, most recently, CJ was 9 for 12 from three. The Pelicans won 135-123. In three games against the Kings, CJ McCollum is 19 for 27 from three. That's 70%. That is better than some free throw percentages out there. Yes. 19 for 27.
Yeah,
Chris,
I believe that's actually better than Domantas Sabonis' free throw percentage, if I'm not mistaken.
I didn't put a name on it.
What's the number?
It was 70.3, I believe.
Oh, just barely. Domantas Sabonis, 70.4.
Domas has been hot from free throw. Leave him alone.
I'm just saying.
Leave
that's
him.
The number. So essentially what you're telling me is CJ McCollum threes are pretty much like, well, that
a free
makes,
throw.
That actually makes me feel like he misses a lot. I don't know why. I think it's because Sabonis misses so many free throws. I mean, that's obviously terrible. Like, you know, ideally, it's crazy if somebody's shooting 40-plus percent from three. So if someone's near doubling it almost. I mean, that's absolutely
insane.
It's
just video game.
Like, and that's where, as crazy as it is to say, the fact that he has those that ridiculous of numbers, and it ties in with the 5-0 thing, mm-hmm. it just at some point it actually has to come back down to earth. You cannot continue to shoot 7. And now it's going to happen eventually. There's no guarantee it's going to happen in the sixth time that they play each other. I guess it would be the fourth time that CJ's played them, but
right.
Or the
yeah, the fourth.
Yeah, the fourth time mm-hmm. CJ's played them, but you know, you cannot shoot 70. Like at some point you're going to shoot 50, 40. Like that's going to be a welcome sight if it happens on Friday. So, you know, you got to hope that some of that natural regression is in your favor, but also you've got to make a concerted effort to slow that down. You cannot give him any, cuz that's also the problem when they played them last time is, yeah, we can talk about CJ who did hit a couple really tough shots, but there was also a couple open ones too.
But that's what I'm saying. From Zion pulls everybody sure. in, and the rotations, I'll put it to you like this. If the rotations look like what they look like against the Warriors, CJ's not shooting 9 of 12.
Right.
Because he was that's wide open.
Yes, on a lot of them. Yes, absolutely. He played a part in it too. He was absolutely on fire. I don't know if he's going to be that on fire ever again. That seems, I would hope that was a special performance out of CJ.
But
the 9
three,
of 12
Chris.
Felt crazy.
But before that, he went 7 of 10.
No, I know. And that, I mean.
And when he went 7 of 10 in that game, I believe, that was the game with no Zion.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he can knock him down. Absolutely. I'm just saying 70% is crazy.
I know.
It's crazy. And I just can't believe he's going to have that kind of performance, especially with the Kings knowing all of these facts and understanding, especially with Zion out.
You have to let somebody else beat you, man.
Exactly. You have to let somebody else beat you. That someone cannot be Brandon Ingram, but you got to pick who that person is. Last time they allowed it to be Dyson Daniels a couple times. He ended up shooting, I think he was 2 of 4 or 2 of 5 mm-hmm. from three, which is better than he normally shoots. Again, Jose Alvarado, he's not going to hit those. And maybe he will, but he shouldn't hit those difficult of shots again. He was having tough floating threes in the corner. Like one of them, again, was behind the hoop that he took and made. Like, and don't get me started on Jose Alvarado either. I'm thankfully we don't have a show on Saturday if Jose Alvarado goes crazy.
He won't.
Because he is the one that can kill all momentum. And he's really the guy.
Did kill all momentum.
Last year in the playoffs, Andrew Wiggins was that guy for the Warriors where every time the Kings would go on a run, Wiggins would hit some tough turnaround jumper, get to the free throw line, do something to stop the momentum. Jose Alvarado does that by just being a pest. Like, he'll do that stupid Grand Theft Alvarado thing where he hangs in the corner. He'll get in your face. He got a tech on D'Lo in the last game they played. Like, he's the type of dude who will swing the emotions of that game. And New Orleans, they don't really care about that team. There are passionate fans there. But in total, it's not a basketball crowd. We're going to talk about it later. They're trying to incentivize people to come to the games by giving them free swag. The one thing that gets that place rocking is Jose Alvarado. If he starts doing all the antics and all that stuff.
Is he their Malik?
He's their Malik. No, he absolutely is.
In
a different way, he absolutely is. He's the guy that gets the crowd going. You know, what's not to love? He's a dude who's under 6 feet tall, who's making it work in a league full of giants. Everybody's going to love to see that show. And he knows how to get him up. So keeping as crazy as it is, keeping Jose Alvarado contained is huge too. You can't let him have those moments because right. In the same way we talk about not letting the Warriors go on their little runs, the Curry flurries, the Draymond threes, all that stuff, you can't let Jose Alvarado give that team life because that's where things can get out of hand. And we've seen, especially against the Pelicans, once that ball gets rolling, the Kings can't stop it. They can't plug all those holes with how New Orleans is built. They can't sag off of Herb Jones. They can't help off of Trey Murphy. They don't have that luxury, especially with the personnel that they have out there.
You wanna feel sick? I know it's almost lunchtime. You wanna
sure.
feel sick?
Why not?
I know we talked about the the cycle, how the Lakers can't beat the Kings can't beat the Pelicans, and the Pelicans can't beat the Lakers. I know. Here are the numbers from that play-in game. This is going to make you sick. Zion Williamson, 40-burger, no pun intended, 17 of 27.
The word is out.
The word is out. Brandon Ingram, first game back,
yep.
11 points.
How many minutes did he play?
He played 25.
25, okay.
Herb Jones, 10 points. Valanciunas, 4 points, 10 rebounds. Zion had 11 rebounds. CJ McCollum, 9 points.
What?
4 of 15 from the field, 1 of 9 from three-point range. 1 of 9, okay? Wow.
I don't like that.
Larry Nance Jr., who I don't even know if he – I don't think he played.
He didn't know.
I don't think he played.
Hurt. He was hurt last time.
10 points, okay, 12 rebounds, 28 minutes. I think maybe that was some of the Brandon Ingram stuff or something like that. Alvarado, honestly, he didn't have a terrible game. 2 for 5, okay, 7 assists.
Wow.
4 personal fouls, only 1 turnover, yeah. 10 points. That's a pretty good game for Jose, so yeah. Maybe that was his good game. And he can chill out tomorrow night. Trey Murphy, 31 minutes. He was the one probably filling in for Brandon Ingram's minutes. 2 for 6 from three ball land for 12 points. Trey Murphy, I think, had a 30-burger against the Kings.
It was something like that.
He was up there.
He had a 25 or something.
He was up there.
Yeah, he was going crazy. And, you know, it's going to be on, you know, it'll be interesting, too, because I know the other day, they matched Davion's minutes with Chris Paul's. I wonder if they feel that same way about Jose Alvarado. I feel like, you know, obviously Davion and Jose are very similar statures, but I would think that, you know, I don't think the Pelicans would put Jose directly on Fox, but if you can get that mismatch, I think no matter how pesky Jose Alvarado is, I would think that De'Aaron Fox would love to dominate that matchup because of, you know, the fact De'Aaron's a taller guard, 6'4". You know, De'Aaron has struggled to get to the rim, whether it be a personal choice or the way that the defenses are setting up. That's a matchup where, you know, I would like to imagine De'Aaron's going to get to the rim a ton. And they don't really have a true rim protector either. Like, Valanciunas is huge. He's a massive, massive mountain of a human, but he's not a rim protector at all. So it'd be interesting to see how often the Kings attack the rim too, because I don't know who's going to be at the rim, especially if Zion's not there. Zion was a decent rim protector. I know B.I. is going to be out there too, but ultimately that might be where the Kings look to make their money.
Yeah, and Sabonis has played pretty well for the most part against the Pelicans. He hasn't been the issue. It's been everybody else. 916 says, well, it sounds like CJ is due to regress to the mean. I'm afraid that he may have just done that against the Lakers, but maybe specifically against the Kings. Hunter Patterson.
That's right.
Okay. One of the best up-and-coming writers in the game joins us of The Athletic when we return. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. As promised, we are joined by one of the best up-and-coming riders in the game right now. He's at every single Kings game, putting out that great content. We are joined by Hunter Patterson, not to mention the streets are saying this man, as a rider, may have the sexiest voice in the game as well.
What's up, fellas? I appreciate y'all having me.
You know, Hunter, you know, I just got to say, Brendan was just in here that pops up. You know what I mean? Brendan sees the comment. He puts it on social media to give everybody context. Hunter was on a pod with Brendan, and somebody said, man, why is his voice so sexy? You're scrolling through. Brendan, did he DM you and say, Hunter, you got people. I'm trying to talk Kings here. What's going on?
Not at all, bro. The first time I saw it was when I got the notification. Look at my timeline, and yeah, it was a good laugh.
There you go. There you go. All right, enough funny business. Chris is cracking up over here. So is Simone behind the glass. Let's start here, man. Before we turn the page to the Pelicans, last thoughts on the Warrior game and everything that you saw from the Kings. What was the main reason you think the Kings were able to take down the foe from the Bay Area and finally come up with a complete game?
I think it had a lot to do with Keegan and his aggressiveness on both sides. Obviously, Keon had a hell of a debut as far as playoffs go, so that was great to see for him. I almost feel like a sense of pride for Keon just because of what it's taken for him to get to this point in his career. But Keegan, I think the fact that he was 50% from the field, 8 for 13, I'm no math guy, but that's a really high percentage from three. Mm-hmm. So he just seemed to turn the corner a little bit, and I think it was cool to see that in comparison to how he started the postseason last year against the Warriors.
Hunter, I'm going to plug your article here. You can go over to The Athletic and read Hunter's piece, actually specifically on Keegan Murray. It's titled How Keegan Murray's Offseason Training with De'Aaron Fox Propelled the Kings Past the Warriors in the Play-In. And that's exactly what I want to ask you about, Hunter. How huge was Tuesday's performance for Keegan Murray in his stages of development here?
First off, appreciate you for that. Always. But I think it was huge for him just to continue believing in himself in the postseason in those really high pressure games, because last year there was a little bit of a learning curve. He was the only rookie last season who was starting on a playoff team, so there was more expectations for him than other guys in his class. But for him to be able to do what he did a couple nights ago, I think one of the telltale signs was just how proud De'Aaron was of him in the postgame presser. He seemed like he was – De'Aaron's usually pretty stoic. He's like, right, even kill guy. He's not too high or too low. And he cracked the biggest smile talking about Keegan and his progression. So I thought that was a great sign, and I think it bodes well for Keegan heading into tomorrow night.
Talking to Hunter Patterson of The Athletic. Hunter, all right, let's start talking Pelicans here. And we had started that when the segment kind of kicked off. What do the Kings need to do? I mean, the closest they've come is within five. Everything else has essentially been a blowout. No Zion, but Brandon Ingram has been a problem. He might be on a minutes restriction. CJ McCollum has been a huge problem. If you are Mike Brown, what are the things that you feel like you can do differently the sixth time around?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely try to run him off the three-point line as much as possible. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to do pretty solid in the paint. Jonas Valanciunas is pretty serviceable as a big guy, and he seems to like that matchup with Domas. But you can't have CJ. I want to say he hit like 7 or 8 threes a couple weeks ago when they played. And Trey Murphy is now really comfortable in his role as a 3-and-D kind of guy. I expect B.I. to be extremely aggressive without Zion. So my biggest thing, I try to run him off the line and get him to get to your second line of defense, and then hopefully Domas can muster up a little bit of rim protection there. But it'll definitely be by committee, and I think just really prioritizing not letting them get comfortable from behind the three-point line.
Hunter, I'm curious. I mean, you've been around this team all season long. Do you feel like the Kings have to win on Friday for this season to even be remotely considered a success?
That's a tough one just because of the injuries they've had.
Sure.
And obviously losing Kevin, a starter, and then Malik, who's almost like a fringe starter, someone who closes games a lot for him. You don't want to make excuses by any means, but I think it is a huge game to win, and I wouldn't necessarily look at it as a letdown or disappointment per se, but I'm sure the fan base will be extremely disappointed if – and considering the fact that this would be the sixth time you've lost to a team in one season, I could only imagine how let down the fan base would be.
Hunter Patterson, before we let you go, one more for you. We think there's probably an obvious answer here, but we're going to ask you anyway. You did an article, I believe, last season about the best drip. Who had the best drip out of the NBA guys? Who is your fashion MVP? I guess we can take it outside of the Kings. If you have two, one with the Kings, one outside of it, who's got the drip? And you can tell the good people how I look at the games as well. If you want to tell them about my drip at the games, you can go ahead and
do that. 1,000%. Allen is he's got to be crazy. Top two and not two as far as the media drip goes.
There you go.
got to give you your credit. I think Nikhil, I will go with like the other Alexander Walker outside of Shea.
Okay.
Well, Shea is a Gilgeous Alexander, but his cousin Nikhil, I think he dresses pretty well. He's pretty fly pulling up to games and whatnot. So Shea's cousin, I would say.
Do you know you had Shea? I asked you this question last year and you had Shea?
Yeah, that's why I was like, I can't give him too much credit.
Back to back.
Yeah, he dresses well, but I couldn't go back to back years. His teammate, Jalen Williams, also they like K can dress really well. So
It's got to be Malik on the Kings.
That's
though,
what
right?
I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, love to Kevin, but I wasn't really feeling that.
The camo, jaw.
I don't know what that was. It kind of reminded me of like my grandma's couch or something growing up. But Kev definitely has had some cool fits. But a couple of nights ago wasn't his best showing.
You got to take some swings, and sometimes you swing and miss. But Hunter, you're always
that's part of fashion. So.
There you exactly. go. Exactly. Hunter's always hitting home runs. Be sure to check out his article and all of his other work on The Athletic. Follow him on social media as well. Hunter Patterson, thank you as always. We will talk to you soon.
Appreciate y'all.
Always.
When we return, continuing the conversation, also breaking down the playoff matchups. Chris and I give our official champion prediction tomorrow, but we will break down the playoffs when we return. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Do people still celebrate Throwback Thursday? Is that still a thing?
I don't think so.
I remember that was early. Early Instagram. I was huge on Throwback Thursday. Yeah. I had them ready. I said, "Mom, send me my old pictures." Send me some,
Whip out the scrapbooks.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Let me see some old pics.
Yeah, no one really TBTs it anymore.
No. What about music? Sometimes I'll be
the Flashback Friday.
I was never a Flashback Friday guy. But on Thursday, like today, I listened to some now. Throwback Thursday can mean a lot of things.
Sure.
This one was 2012, 2013. You know what I mean? Yeah. Something like that. But sometimes
were
I
you gonna
I
say Migos?
Jiggy. No.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say, I was listening to some old Migos or something. I was like, okay, that's
Nate's listening to Juicy J somewhere.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was the strangest day ever. I still cannot believe that he had that much 3-6 Mafia on his Spotify.
Yes. He's a big fan of him.
Huge. And Korn. Those are the
for no reason.
That's the mix. Simone, do you partake in Throwback Thursday music wise?
I don't. I mean, honestly, a lot of my rotation already has it.
Sure.
Pretty intrinsically involved, but
you're pretty trendy. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, I try to be.
There you go. Well, it never crossed over to shows. I'm not gonna watch an old show on a Thursday. Let me watch Nick at Night every Thursday.
Keenan and Kel. Thursday.
I'm trying to remember if even if there are bars or restaurants or anywhere around here that do Throwback Thursday nights.
There was a place in the city. And they would do, it was, I don't want to overstate it here, but it was at 5 o'clock, it would be 50s music and drinks were 50 cents.
Whoa.
At 6 o'clock, it would be 60s, drinks were 60 cents and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
I like it.
Yeah. That's
dangerous.
Dangerous. That's what I was thinking.
Younger years. That was very, very.
There's Motown Mondays downtown.
Okay, they had one. Okay, I need my Motown Mondays.
Yeah, I got a spot. There's a spot that does Motown Mondays.
We got a spot. There you go. And hopefully the Eastern Conference and Western Conference teams will have a spot in the finals. That's what they're looking for as we break down. Chris, you want to start with the East first?
Yeah, let's do the least. Why not?
There you go. It'll be quicker.
The Eastern Conference.
All roads lead to the Celtics.
Yeah,
all right.
That's right.
Let's start here. I'm just looking at the teams that we know and the matchups that we already know. Magic, Cavaliers. I know you love to make fun of the Cavs. Do you have the Magic in this one?
Yeah, I think I do. It's a little tough because Orlando is one of those teams that doesn't have really any playoff experience at all. There is a bit of just happy to be here vibes with them, but I've fallen out of love with Cleveland's team in general. Like as they were kind of coming up, I was like, oh my gosh, you have Jared Allen. Loved Evan Mobley's game coming in. Darius Garland wasn't as big of a fan of as everybody else is, but he's still a really good player. Not a big Donovan Mitchell guy. That's well documented. I think that they can get it done. I talk a lot about how they got upset last year in the first round by the Knicks in pretty embarrassing fashion that nobody talks about. I think they got a little bit something, but I will say there's a lot of smoke behind this Donovan Mitchell kind of got one foot out the door. And that stuff usually ends up showing during the playoffs. There usually be some moments where you can feel some tension or some unrest. And, Donovan already plays a I don't know how else to say it, high volume shooting style of basketball. If you're going to play like that and it's not going to lead to success, mm-hmm. I think you're going to see some cracks in the armor if they go down two games, maybe if they, you know, end up getting into a clutch, win or go home situation. If they fold it, it wouldn't surprise me. I would give the Cavs the edge, but all that stuff lying above the underneath the surface makes me a little bit hesitant, but I'll still go Cleveland.
I'm going to go with the Cleveland. Look, we've seen the Cavs get hot literally against the Kings.
Yep.
And they had that weird stretch where they should have lost some games and they had some crazy comebacks. So it probably should be the Cavs. And I'm going to go with the Cavs, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Magic pull it off. I don't know if the Magic have enough offensively.
Yeah.
And the Cavs, you know, they got the two big boys down in the paint. So I think they're going to be able to hang on. Did you see Kendrick Perkins? I believe it was Kendrick Perkins say, I'm pretty sure it was Kendrick Perkins say that Donovan Mitchell is actually in Darius Garland's way.
Interesting.
As
I
if
did
Darius
not see
Garland
that, no.
should be the... Maybe the number one guard, right? Because he can't be the number one option.
Right.
But maybe the number one guard. And again, earlier in the show, I brought up, or we were talking about the Hawks, and we brought up Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. DeJounte Murray isn't small. He's 6'5". Right. Chris looked it up. So he's not. It's not technically a small duo, but it's just a duo that ain't working.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of it. I think that they both do really similar things, and neither of them really, like, I guess we're all agree with Perkins, they don't really complement each other
it's
very
the two
well.
Scoring, yeah. The two scoring guard duo.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to really be a thing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if it is, like, that kind of has to be, like, that's it. You don't, like, if you're going to have two guards that shoot a lot, that probably means they're not passing to the other three people out on the floor, and it just kind of makes those guys into role players and a lot of ball watching. And I don't know, I think there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen too. Caris LeVert is somebody who's also heavy on the ball guy. So it's not a perfectly built team, but I think they have more talent than Orlando. Yeah, I think that the offense is going to end up showing out for Cleveland, but Orlando's going to make it tough on them because they play really rugged defense. Jonathan Isaac, who apparently is going to be a sixth man of the year candidate, another one that we have to worry about. He's been great defensively.
Gordon Hollinger.
It'll be interesting to see how he impacts the series because he truly has been, and we saw it in that little stretch. Remember when the Kings played Orlando, Jonathan Isaac looked like an MVP. So it'll be interesting to see how much of Jonathan Isaac we see in that series because they still lean pretty heavily towards playing Wendell Carter as their center.
Sixers, Knicks.
This is tough. This is – and how, just in general, because it was kind of the conversation, I heard Stephen A. do like a five-minute ramble about why the Knicks shouldn't be afraid of the Sixers or the Heat, no matter who. It was in the pregame.
You?
No, he did not convince me. I'm curious how you feel. Do you think that this is about as bad of a situation
yes.
that you can get
yeah.
if you're the Knicks? I can't imagine
it
being worse for them. They really don't have – they have Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson's a good rim protector. He is not like a universe – like he's not going to be able to guard Joel out on the perimeter and stop Joel from getting to what he wants to. I don't see how Joel Embiid doesn't just kill the Knicks by himself. The Knicks like to play low-scoring games. I think that's going to play right into Joel's hands. I just think there's going to be too much Embiid, and Maxey will probably have one or two 30-point games in there too.
I have no clue. Yeah, they're going to show Jalen Brunson a lot of different looks. I have no clue how healthy Joel Embiid is.
That's a good point.
There are clips
definitely
of him.
A good point.
I think he was trying to will a free throw in, and he fell to the ground, and people said he flopped at the free throw line. He falls
like
a lot. Yeah, he falls a lot. Yeah. He was some. He I think he got injured in the play-in or the game before
yeah,
the play-in.
Yeah.
I don't trust Joel
that's
Embiid.
That's a good point. No, that's
it's
fair.
Not about the Sixers.
Very fair.
I don't really trust Joel Embiid, and I know Stephen A. is conflicted because he loves his Knicks. But he
let's
has,
go Knicks.
But he's covered Philadelphia sports, including Temple.
Whatsoever.
He covered Philadelphia sports for 76 years, so I know he's conflicted on this, but I'm going to go Sixers, assuming Joel is healthy.
Big
so
assumption.
Do with that what you will. Celtics, whoever it is, I think the Celtics will take care of business. And last but not least, your favorite player. Tyrese Halliburton, Bucks and Pacers. Are we hoping the Pacers don't pull this off? Giannis
absolutely.
Giannis, with that the calf injury, it might be.
Shams just put out 3 minutes ago a video, so I don't know exactly what he says, but he says latest on Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo's status for first round versus Pacers being in jeopardy. So his status for the entire series could be in jeopardy. Doesn't seem like he's going to play the first couple games. And that's pretty much what happened to the Bucks last year. Giannis got hurt in that first game and never really was to 100%. I believe he hurt his back last year in the playoffs. If they don't have Giannis, you know, we've seen that movie before. And it did not end well for the Bucks last year. The Pacers are good enough, and they've had the Bucks number this entire season. Let's not forget about Ballgate, when Tyrese took the ball or whatever, and Giannis got all upset. I definitely think the Pacers offensively can push the pace, no pun intended, on the Bucks, and Bucks should be nervous.
Without Giannis, I think the Pacers could win, and that's just what happens. And there's going to be, if Sacramento's at home, just prepare yourself for the Tyrese Halliburton thing again. I would prepare for the worst here because the Bucks just have not been trustworthy all season long. They're lucky that the East is so weak this season. When we return doing the West Coast, also, Pelicans are bribing their fans to go to the game on Friday. We're not joking. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Jontay Porter is banned from the NBA for betting.
Just being an idiot in general.
Yeah. So we talked about this a couple weeks ago, came back around. Jontay Porter, turns out he was betting on the NBA. This is from Woj. It's from Woj yesterday. Per league statement, the league's investigation found that prior to the Raptors' March 20th game, Porter disclosed confidential information about his own health status to an individual he knew to be an NBA bettor, another individual with whom Porter associated and knew to be an NBA bettor, subsequently placed an $80,000 parlay proposition bet with an online sportsbook to win $1.1 million, wagering that Porter would underperform in that March 20th game. I saw something, Chris, I don't necessarily... There's just so much going on. I did a report that he had made, I don't know, $2-3 million in the NBA, and he had made $29,000 betting. Per NBA, Woj goes on, in addition, from January through March 2024, while traveling with the Raptors or Raptors 905, their G League affiliate, Porter placed at least 13 bets on NBA games using an associate's online betting account. Uh-oh, we've heard that story before. These bets ranged in size from $15 to $22,000 for a total of $54,000. The total payout from these bets was $76,000, resulting in a net winning of $21,000. None of these bets involved any game in which Porter played. So, yeah, that fits what people were saying. He's made a couple million in the NBA, and he's made $29,000, and now he is banned from the NBA.
Even though he did not bet on any games he played in, he did bet against his own team, though.
He did bet against the Raptors.
The allegations against Porter are extensive. They include Porter betting against the Raptors and sharing confidential information about his health with a well-known gambler. This guy is, like, it's one thing if you're going to be an idiot and you're going to bet on the league that you're in already.
Yes.
I maybe understand how you could say, okay, as long as I keep this general, like if I just act as if I'm every other human out there and don't bet on my team, maybe there'll be some leeway because,
you're saying bet normally.
Bet normally.
Yeah.
This idiot bet on his own team to lose.
Yeah.
He bet on his own lose.
You're done.
Cooked after that.
Yeah, you're
that
done.
That is the only thing that is an unquestionable, you cannot bet, even if you're not playing, you cannot bet on your own team to lose. That is insider trading 101 in a bannable list. Just an amazing amount of incompetence here. I like, this is so bad at trying to be sneaky. It's almost like I almost want to say that it's so stupid that he must have thought this is too obvious to even get caught.
Right, right.
Because anybody who thought about this for 4 minutes, 5 minutes, having a back and forth conversation, probably would have thought, okay, obviously you have some information. Obviously we can bet, but what could maybe be the downsides of this? How could somebody maybe find out? I don't know. Maybe because any human placing more than a $5 bet on Jontay Porter to do anything is suspicious.
Yeah.
Let alone, you said 15 to how many?
15 to, I think it was, it was 15 to 22,000.
Like $22,000 bet on Jontay Porter to get out of bed is crazy. Like, what are we talking about?
It's just not. It's not
of
smart.
Of course it's going to raise some red flags.
No, get ready to speak. Get ready to speak EuroLeague, buddy.
I don't even know.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm taking this in a completely different direction. I know the Shohei thing, it wasn't technically Shohei, but Calvin Ridley, other people, right? Do you think there could be a lower level? This is a little different here. Do you think that I'm going in the direction of LIV Golf, but even more extreme? If you combine LIV Golf and XFL, just a slightly, maybe it's the big three or people that we know. And yeah, I'm
like
going there.
Like a betting league?
A betting league and or it's a league where you're playing and you can also bet on yourself.
Sure.
To then win double the money. Now, that's a little bit different.
Okay. But you can, There's like a version of a big three where we can maybe make that happen,
And then after that, I bet on the game after that. And it's just, and then you say, trail me on whatever.
Wow.
And you just have a league where it's out in the open and you do it for different sports. I bet I'm going to make this putt. If I don't, I lose my winnings. If I make it, I double my winnings.
There's something there for sure. I mean we're not going to go away. We're not far off.
The problem is
there's a league of like literally fans pick the plays for football, right?
Exactly. The problem is it would have to be people that aren't as good. The product would be either older players that can't hack it or can kind of hack it.
I like that for the big three. You could definitely implement that.
You could definitely let them bet.
Yeah.
You can start talking trash.
Exactly. Better than old heads talking trash.
Literally, if I make this shot, $20,000,
yes.
I make this shot, and you put it in, if you want to put it in, I'm getting a little deep here, but because it's not
going
to go away.
Not only is it not going away, it's only going to get more and more integrated into sports in general. I mean, like, I saw our guy Law Murray that we had on the show who covers the Clippers for The Athletic. Mm-hmm. He did a tour of the Intuit Dome yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, they talked a lot about the wall and stuff, but it wouldn't surprise me if a big part of that, Steve Ballmer's talking so much about keeping people in their seats, if they have some sort of screen in front of them that is like a live betting screen.
Well,
you know?
Because obviously you can't do games in California.
Right.
So you essentially, those screens are filled with the props.
Exactly.
That you can do. Partner with those businesses. It's not going away.
No, it's definitely not going
and
away.
People are worried about NIL. You're worried about NIL. You need to be worried about both.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because this thing is going to get.
Yeah.
Now, it's going to be fringe guys like Jontay who's going to trick off their careers like Jontay. But all it takes is, and we, you know, the whole Shohei thing, it's gone now. It's over now. But it's going to continue to pop up.
So you think, and I really don't know which direction I would think. Do you think that this is like all the Calvin Ridley, the Shohei? Mm-hmm. Shohei is probably obviously going to be the biggest one of these. But do you feel like this is just a, like an integration period where it's like, hey, this is new, and
they're popping things out.
Do you think the problem gets worse? Like, do you think this is something that maybe disappears with time as people get a better understanding of, okay, we just can't do this or else you will be banned. And in the future, people understand that that's the risk and so they don't do it? Or, like you're saying, is this going to be maybe something that is just always around?
There's always going to be an idiot. And I mean, we really want to get Michael Porter Sr. on the show because, brother,
boy's got some,
I know you got two kids. Well, one was in the league and the other, but They make some questionable decisions. Some questionable decisions.
Real
so
curious there's, Mike there.
There's always going to be something there. And I would say that, to your point, unless you're truly addicted to gambling, the stars will never worry about it because they're so rich.
Right, exactly.
You'd have to be a real idiot.
Michael Jordan.
Well, it was a different time. I'm not touching that one. But there will always be a fringe person who is willing to take the chance.
Right.
And is also stupid.
Yeah.
It's going to take a – so I don't know if it'll
be – it's a lethal combo.
It's a lethal combo. I think – I don't know how big it'll get as far as how many people are gambling throughout the league.
Is this going to be a yearly thing?
Yes.
In one sport, in one of the four major sports?
Yes. Yeah. And maybe not the NBA.
Right.
I mean, minor league baseball, they're bored. They're in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
They're not getting paid the way they should be getting paid. Let me throw some cheese on something, and if I'm out, I'm out. I've been in single A for 4 years anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there will always be something. I don't know if we'll have to worry. Calvin really might be the highest of the high as far as a guy who, you know, will there always be a Calvin Ridley as far as a fringe star?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. When we return, we get back into the Western Conference playoffs and who we think will win their first round matchup. Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.